From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Hey, we have a great show for you today. And I think that in the last show, we talked with Teresa Tomeo about the Jubilee year and visiting Rome and all the incredible places that are related to that Jubilee and events that are happening in Rome. And in addition, we can also focus on the Jubilee in a special way. The church has released some new indulgences. And we can also focus in a special way on the church's new release of indulgences for this Jubilee year. And we've got a double plenary indulgence coming up. And joining us today is author Susan Tassone. She's known as the Purgatory Lady, of course, and she's written the best-selling book, New Friends, Now and Forever. It's a purgatory book for children, and she's quite an expert on indulgences, especially when we think about praying for those people who have gone before us. So we'll be excited to talk with Susan later in the show. And we'll also be talking with Father Pablo Migone. He's the vicar for Mission Advancement for the Diocese of Savannah. And he'll be talking to us about the exciting news that just came out related to the Martyrs of Georgia. They have moved along on the path to canonization. Pope Francis has recognized in a decree their martyrdom. And so this adds to the list of Americans who are on that path to sainthood and who have reached the level of blessed. So this was huge news, and we'll be excited to talk with Father Pablo Migone later in the show. And check out my television series called They Might Be Saints. It airs every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and it talks about the Americans on the path to sainthood. And we'll be focusing on Father Patrick Peyton, the charismatic priest who pioneered the use of radio and television to bring the rosary to the world, staging massive rallies and enlisting Hollywood celebrities in his singular mission. And that's a great episode. I encourage people to check that one out on February 19th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And also my other series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Pont Men. That episode airs on Saturday, February 22nd at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I travel to France, northwest France, to Pont Men, where the Virgin Mary, under the title of Our Lady of Hope, appeared to farm children and to an army precipitating the end of the Franco-Prussian War. So check that one out, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Pont Men, on Saturday, February 22nd at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. It airs every Saturday. And for more information, you can go to explorewiththemiraclehunter.com. We're talking about the Jubilee year here, and you can go to Rome and check out the Jubilee, or you can join me on a pilgrimage to Rome, Milan, Turin, and Florence. I'll be going for the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati, and that's July 28th through August 4th, coming up this summer. And we'll, of course, on all my pilgrimages, we go to places of saints and miracles, and we're going to be seeing the Marian apparition sites and visit the Duomo in Milan. We'll visit Turin to see the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist, where the Shroud of Turin is held, and walk in the footsteps of Pier Giorgio and see the place where St. John Bosco had his famous visions. We'll go to Florence to see those great artists, Dante, Leonardo, Michelangelo, Raphael, Botticelli, Donatello. Others will see the David, as well as the site of the apparition of Mary to the seven holy founders of the Servites. And we'll finish up in Rome to see the many incredible sites around the Vatican and finish with the canonization of one of the great modern saints, that's Pier Giorgio Frassati. So sign up. You can go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. Find out more, and there's a link there for you to sign up as well. July 28th through August 4th. Hope to see you there. Later in the show today, we're going to be looking at the Might Be Saint of the Day. For today, we've got Blessed Michael Sopochko. You might know him, of course, as the spiritual director of St. Faustina. He lived from 1888 to 1975 in Poland. And also the 365 Days with Mary project for today, February 15th, is Our Lady of Comfort from Arezzo in Italy in the year 1796. The question of the week, are healing miracles a feature of all Marian apparition sites like they are at Lourdes? It's a great question. And the might be the miracle of the day is the apparition to visionary Josephine Radom, and that happened in 1872 on today's date. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And perhaps this isn't a true miracle or the miracles we like to focus on, Marian apparitions and Eucharistic miracles, but it's somewhat of a miraculous feat of engineering, you might say. There's an exciting project to build the world's largest statue of the Virgin Mary. And of course, Poland, it's been long known for its Catholic heritage. It's set to become the home of a huge monument to the Blessed Virgin Mary. And it's a major project underway near the town of Kikol in Poland, where one of the tallest statues of the Virgin Mary ever built is set to rise. And it's been put together by this billionaire Roman Korusik and his wife, and they've planned a 180-foot statue to soar above the landscape there, making it a tribute to faith and heritage. And when it's completed, it will far surpass the height of Brazil's world-famous Cristo Redentor, Christ the Redeemer, which stands at 98 feet. And so it will feature in a 50-foot crown, and the figure of Mary will reportedly stand at 131 feet with her hands open and her head gently inclined downward. And this pose is intended to give a sense of maternal welcome and peace. And the base of the statue will serve as a panoramic viewing terrace, offering visitors sweeping views of the surrounding landscape, making it both a spiritual and visual experience. And the head of the project, or the mayor there, says that Kikol City received an application for issuing development conditions for the construction of a viewing area with a statue of the Virgin Mary, along with a social and technical building and land development. So this is going to be quite the scene, I think, this building of this statue, bigger than Christ the Redeemer. We'll be posting photos of that on the Miracle Hunter Facebook page and Instagram once we get those. So that's an exciting project coming up in Poland. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize for an emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. Last week, we had a great interview with Teresa Tamio about Italy and all the wonderful places there of saints and miracles, and made the comment that Italy has the most saints by far, and it's somewhat of the ultimate home court advantage, in my opinion. Which country has the second most saints? And my producer, Rich, got that one right. That's France, with 1,110 saints and 612 blesseds. And just as a point of comparison, there have been 10,000 saints in Catholic history. So France takes a big chunk of that. So thanks to everybody who wrote in with that correct answer. And the question for this week, we're going to be talking with Susan Tassone, the Purgatory Lady, about the double plenary indulgence for this jubilee year. So the question for this week, what are the standard conditions for someone to receive a plenary indulgence? If you think you know that answer, want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe you'll be the winner, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking to the Purgatory Lady herself, Susan Tassone, about the double plenary indulgence for this jubilee year. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We've got a big jubilee year that we're celebrating in our Catholic Church this year, and people all over the world are going to Rome to celebrate. And for people who want to join me on pilgrimage, I'll be going in July and August, and you can go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter to join me on my journey to Rome for the jubilee year. And one of the great features of the jubilee, of course, is that you don't have to be in Rome to celebrate, and you can take advantage of some of these great blessings and events that are happening all around the world. And one of the remarkable ones is a double plenary indulgence that has just been decreed, just announced for the entire world, and I believe it's the first one ever. And so this is exciting news, of course. We'll go into what a plenary indulgence is, but this is big news for everyone in our Catholic Church. We're so excited to be joined today by one of our favorite guests, that's Susan Tassone. Of course, you know her as the Purgatory Lady, and she's the author of numerous Catholic books, including her latest, New Friends Now and Forever, which is a children's book and won many Catholic media Award. So we're so excited to have Susan back onto the show. Welcome back, Susan.
Miracle Hunter, it's great to be back again. Happy New Year, happy Jubilee year. Well, happy New Year, we're really already going into that soon. So it's a perfect time to be talking about this double indulgence, Michael.
Yeah, no, I think this is really exciting news, and not everybody is tuned into this, but I think even before we get into the announcement of this double indulgence, what is an indulgence anyway? What do people need to know?
You know, Michael, when I was writing Praying with the Saints for the Holy Souls, and it had all these incredible articles and stories. You could always get that book through EWTN, and the last thing I had to address was indulgences, which for me was really difficult. How do I get my head around it? How do I understand it? And I had to go through, sometimes it's so technical language, you're like, what is this? And of course, I was, you know, God was guiding me, and I was able to put it in layman's terms. So why do we have indulgences? What's their purpose? The purpose, Michael, is to, actually, I'm going to say off the top of my head, is to avoid purgatory. It helps deduct our purgatory time, because we're making up for the penances that were omitted, that were poorly done, or that were too light in comparison to, like, the enormity of your sins. And where do we get the penances? We get them when we go to confession, and the priest gives us a penance to do certain things, but we need to do more than that. We need to, the corporal spiritual works of mercy. We need to be living the sacramental life. So their purpose is to make up for the gaps. I like what Archbishop Fulton Sheen said. He said it's, you know, what is it? He said, picture a nail on a board. And he said, once you remove the nail, which is the sin, with confession, the hole, which is the punishment, remains to be filled. So how do we fill that hole? How do we make up for that hole from the result of the sin? We do it by penance and reparation. So when you go to confession, the guilt is removed. What's left is the stain that's still there. And how do we remove the stain? Through indulgences, through acts of all kinds of acts that the church gives us to help remove that. So the indulgences fill that hole. And they come from, in fact, the word itself, Michael, comes from, it's indulgentia, which means, God's tender love. So we have so many graces. He lavishes his mercy on us, and we have this treasure house of indulgences that we can gain for our soul that will remit, that punishment so we don't go to purgatory, and we can apply the indulgences to the souls in purgatory as well. I hope that's not confusing. I hope it was clear.
And so when we talk about how people can get these indulgences, what is the way that, in the normal way, that people can be ready and be able to accept an indulgence?
Well, so what you do is, we have to do this repair work, on earth. And so we go to confession, and we gain many indulgences that heal the effects of this, of the sins, of that takes away those stains. And the ways we do it is the church gives us a criteria to gain these indulgences, and that is to, as I said, go to confession, and now it's extended to 20 days, so go to confession, go to Mass, receive communion, and then there's a performance of an act, which could be the Stations of the Cross, it could be adoration, it could be saying the rosary, it could be spiritual and corporal works of mercy. There's a long, long list. In fact, if you want the list, EWTN has a book called The Incritian of Devotions, which lists, if you go to a first communion, a ceremony, if you go to a confirmation, if you go to an Easter, there are so many ways in terms of fulfilling that act, okay? And so you have to be sure, though, when you're doing it, that you receive communion on that day, and then you can fulfill the act within, I think, 8 to 20 days doing something. But you have to go to confession. You've got 20 days for that. You have to go to Mass, receive communion, and then fulfill the act. I hope this is clear, because sometimes it's a lot giving for the first time hearing this.
And what's so interesting is just this year for the Jubilee, Rome has made a decree that there is a double plenary indulgence this year. So what is double about it, and how do you get it? And I know there's some involvement with the Jubilee Church.
Exactly. In fact, National Catholic Register, I did an interview with them. And if you go to EWTN's Facebook, that article that we did on how to gain a double indulgence is up there. So you'll be able to hear it again or read it again, or just go to National Catholic Register and type in, you know, gaining a double indulgence. And so what does that mean? It's unprecedented, Michael. You know, we can gain many indulgences each day, one a day, by doing, like I said, by doing the requirements. You go to Mass, make sure you've been to confession within 20 days, you receive communion, and then do an act. But the Church, and it tells me somebody was thinking about the purgatorial souls for the Jubilee year. The Church, and this is unprecedented, I've never seen anything in any Jubilee year, decided that you can gain two indulgences in one day. I was speechless. For the souls in purgatory. Strictly for the souls in purgatory. So that means you can, you know, fulfill the requirements that we talked about, go to Mass, receive communion, you could have, you're gaining indulgence, you could give that to yourself or to the souls, and then you can go to Mass a second time and receive communion, and that communion is strictly for the souls in purgatory. And what I noticed in the decree was they didn't say for a soul. It said for the souls, meaning that that second indulgence that you're gaining for them is for a multitude of souls. And I've been doing it, and I could feel the power. It's very, very powerful to do for them because, again, they become your intercessors, that the more you do for them, the more you increase their intercessory power. So the important thing to note, though, is when you're doing a double indulgence, be sure that one of those churches is a Jubilee church. You have to be present at least one of those churches. How do you know what churches, you know, are giving us the Jubilee indulgence? Just go on the diocesan website of your, you know, wherever you live, and they're going to give you a list of all the churches that they've designated to gain Jubilee indulgences. So for either, you know, you have to be sure, no matter what, you have to be sure you're in you go to a Jubilee church. You can go to a second church to go get the second indulgence. It doesn't have to be, you know, a Jubilee church, but it has the first one of those two has to be a Jubilee indulgence.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Susan Tassone, the Purgatory Lady and author of many books, including New Friends, Now and Forever. And that article that Susan just mentioned on the National Catholic Register, I just posted it to the Facebook page of The Miracle
Perfect.
Hunter. So you can go there and find out all the requirements and read over again the way that you can get this very special double indulgence for this Jubilee year.
And remember,
Susan,
Michael,
I know that
you're helping yourself. That means you're deducting purgatory time for yourself as well. It's not just for them. You're also gaining, less time in purgatory.
Yeah, amazing. And when we talk about what we can do to make sure that when our time comes, that masses are said for us, Gregorian masses specifically, as you always mention, Susan, how do we make sure? Do we tell other people, or what's the best way to let it be known that we do want these masses said for ourselves when our time has come?
The best thing, Michael, I was telling you, I've done quite a few radio shows about this, and what I was hearing from other radio show hosts is that families are not having masses, funeral masses, for their parents, for their family members. They're just doing a service. Well, that poor soul, what's what they call them, poor souls, that poor soul is not getting the mass, which helps to remit any temporal punishment, helps to remove the stain. So what I encourage you to do, if you've got a family that's not going to do that for you, put these Gregorian masses in your will. Put them in your will. And like as we always discuss, Michael, one of the best places that are reliable, that you can count on, that and that you're helping these missionary priests is the Pious Union of St. Joseph, which we talk about all the time when we're on television. I'm on television with Father Mitch. So, designate the Pious Union of St. Joseph in your will for a set of Gregorians or 12 sets. I did 12 sets for my mother. I got to live up to my reputation. I have to share this. One of the books I did while I was doing, at the time she died was 30-day devotions, and it turned out that the imprimatur came on the 12th sets of masses. That I did it for a year, and on the 12th set, you have to use the date from the letter of the bishop that goes in the book for the imprimatur. It was the day she died, which I was telling me. My mom I take it as I'm good. You know, I got the 12 sets. We're good.
That's beautiful. We've been talking today with Susan Tassone, author of New Friends, Now and Forever. We're so grateful for her reflections on purgatory and on indulgences, especially in this Jubilee year.
And right, Michael, remember the children, too.
And I was going to ask, yeah. When we talk about indulgences, can anybody get these? I mean, how old do you have to be to get an indulgence?
You know, of age, of reason, which is when you go the first time you go to confession, when you're 7 years old or 8 years old, when you receive your first confession and communion. So don't forget the children, because it's up to the parents to plant the seed of all these traditions and these graces in our faith. So take the children with you. Take them to the cemetery. Help them gain indulgence. So they're applying their double indulgence to the souls in purgatory as well. In fact, like we talked about, Michael, we got a great book for children explaining the souls in purgatory, New Friends Now and Forever. As you mentioned, it won 5 awards. It's the only book ever written for children on purgatory. And how do you teach it? You tell a story, and that's what we did. And it's just gotten rave reviews. So remember the children. Don't leave them out. And there was one other thing, Michael, I wanted to say what an indulgence is not, you know, because there was some issues way back when during Martin Luther that it was like first they were selling indulgences. Well, it's not that, okay? They come from the mercy of Jesus, you know. That means we can satisfy our debts. We can avoid purgatory by gaining indulgences. There were saints that were literally, they called them glutton for indulgences, trying to gain as many as they could to avoid purgatory. But what they are, they're an aid for growth toward spiritual change, for inner change, for a deeper conversion of heart. They're not a discount for performing these acts. So you have to have the appropriate disposition that's required to benefit from these indulgences.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Susan Tassone, for talking to us about this new double plenary indulgence and for giving us some background on what indulgences are and what they're not, what are the conditions, and how do we get these? And so people can check out that article that features Susan from the National Catholic Register on my Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter for more information. Thank you so much, Susan Tassone, for joining us on today's
program. It's a pleasure, Michael. Let's empty purgatory for the Jubilee year.
God bless you, Susan. Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye. That was Susan Tassone, author of Now, New Friends, Now and Forever. Check that new one out from Susan Tassone and all her work on purgatory. We're grateful for that. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Are healing miracles a feature of all Marian apparition sites, like Lourdes? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. I love getting the questions in email. I love getting them when I do speaking engagements. People can go to miraclehunter.com and click on the contact tab and send me a message that way. I just got back from Tampa Bay where I gave a talk, and one of the great questions from the crowd was, are healing miracles a feature of all Marian apparition sites like they are at Lourdes? And that was, again, someone from Tampa Bay. And it's a great question because at Lourdes, we have as many as 7,000 remarkable cures having been reported to the medical bureau there and investigated, with 71, the 71st having happened this past year, miracles happening having been validated by the local bishop and by the medical commission. And so healing miracles are a big deal at Lourdes, especially given that water that was dug up by St. Bernadette Subaru. And many people go there even today to bathe in that water. And so we see in other places around the world, at Fatima and otherwise, at Benu in Belgium in 1933, there were healing miracles that were claimed right after the Marian apparitions happened there. And those all go towards the approval in that 1978 document, The Norms of the Congregation for Proceeding and Judging Alleged Private Revelations and Apparitions. It lists out specifically that healing miracles are considered in the approval process, and also in the 2024 document, the spiritual fruits are acknowledged as well. So we do see at Marian apparition sites vocations, conversions, healing miracles that do happen, and those all lend to the credibility of the event, but not in the same way at Lourdes. Lourdes is perhaps the biggest and greatest place of Catholic miracles around the world. So thank you, Tom, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be reading your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. For each week, we do a Marian title that lines up to each day of the calendar year. For today's date, on February 15th, we've got Our Lady of Comfort from Arezzo in Italy in the year 1796. The story goes that on June 3rd, 1781, a terrible earthquake devastated the region surrounding Arezzo, causing hundreds of casualties and great fear for the city. On February 15th, 1796, another earthquake threatened the city. At dusk, three craftsmen prayed penitently and lit a lamp before a popular image of the Virgin blackened by smoke from a stove. And the Madonna of Provenzano image suddenly changed to white and bright, and the word spread that Our Lady wanted to comfort all inhabitants of Arezzo and free them from the scourge of earthquakes. When the news spread, the bishop, accompanied by other priests, solemnly carried it to the cathedral and established a canonical process to determine the truth of the events. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. Each week we talk about a miracle happening around the world that happened on the day's date. For February 15th, 1872, in Pruy-le-Cateau in France, the visionary Josephine Radome, age 13, received a vision. Mary first appeared to Josephine at a Marian altar on the church of that place. It was February 14th, 1872. Our Lady appeared in all white robe with blue and pink and wore a head, a crown of flowers. And the same apparition appeared twice more on February 15th and 16th. In the latter, Mary exposed a burning desire to convert the world, and she invited her to pray fervently for this purpose, particularly to recite the Hail Mary and the Ave Maria Stella. Sometime later, she became a nun under the title of Josephine Marie Léonet. And that is the miracle of the day from February 15th, 1872. And if we look at the sainthood news for today on January 27th, Holy Father Pope Francis received an audience as Eminence Cardinal Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. And during this audience, the Supreme Pontiff authorized the Dicastery to promote a decree regarding the martyrdom of the servant of God, Lacarion May. He was born Francois Benjamin. He's the brother of the Institute of the Marist Brothers of the Schools, born in Bain in Switzerland on July 21st, 1870, and he was killed in Odium Fidei out of hatred of the faith on July 1909 in Barcelona. And that is the sainthood news for today. And the might-be saint of the day, you might know him, Blessed Michael Sopochko, who lived from 1888 to 1975 in Poland. He was born in Poland, and he began his studies at the seminary in Vilnius in Lithuania in 1910. Ordained in 1914, he became a parish priest in Vilnius and military chaplain in World War I from 1914 to 18. He was assigned to Vilnius in Warsaw and got his doctorate later. And of course, he's known related to the Divine Mercy with St. Faustina. And in 1959, the Vatican forbade the Divine Mercy devotion and censored Michael Sopochko. But in 1965, Archbishop Karol Wojtyła of Krakow, future Pope John Paul II, reopened the investigation of the vision and messages, which led to the reversal of the ban and censure in 1978. And during the period of reinvestigation, Father Michael wrote the four-volume book, Mercy of God in His Works. And he died on February 15th, 1975 in Białystok in Poland of natural causes. And he's buried there. And his decree of heroic virtue was in 2004 and 2008 by Pope Benedict XVI. He was beatified at the Sanctuary of Divine Mercy in Białystok. And he is today's Might Be Saint of the Day. And check out They Might Be Saints this week. Blessed Miriam Teresa Domjanovic coming up on Wednesday at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Father Paolo Magone about the martyrs of Georgia. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show and any of my programs on EWTN television are probably familiar with the Martyrs of La Florida. That was a set of martyrs, Spanish priests and Appalachian natives who died perhaps at the hands of the English out of hatred for the faith. And so I've been well aware of the martyrdom causes throughout the United States. And one of the other ones that I have been following are the Martyrs of Georgia. And just coming out at the end of last month, Pope Francis received an audience Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints. And in this audience, he authorized this dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the martyrdom of the servants of God, Pedro de Corpa, and four companions of the Order of Friars Minor killed in Odium Fidei out of hatred of the faith in September 1597 in Florida, now Georgia, in the United States of America. So we have a group of martyrs from Georgia who are now moved along to blessed as a result of this decree from Pope Francis. So this is exciting news, and this is right here in our very own United States. And we're so excited to be joined today by Father Pablo Magone, Vicar for Mission Advancement for the Diocese of Savannah, to talk to us about these martyrs of Georgia. Welcome to the program today, Father Pablo.
Thank you, Michael. It's good to be with you.
Now, this has to be exciting news for you. I know this cause has been working a very long time on this, the Martyrs of Georgia, for this recognition by Rome. Talk to us sort of about your guild or your cause there, the celebration that has happened when you received this news.
Mm-hmm. We were very, very excited and very pleased to receive this news last month. We've been working very hard for many, many years. The work of many people throughout several decades. Work of the Franciscans, which are now the province of Our Lady of Guadalupe, the OSM in Atlanta. Before that province was created, it was the Holy Name Province of New York. Them working with the Diocese of Savannah, working with the archaeologists, historians, and the cause was prepared and sent to Rome. And about 10 years ago, I became involved when Bishop Hartmeyer, who is Bishop of Savannah, now Archbishop of Atlanta, and I went to the Congregation of Causes of Saints to inquire on the status of the cause. It had somewhat grown cold a little bit. We had not heard back. So after that meeting at the congregation, we learned that things were, as a matter of fact, moving along. And for the last 10 years, the Diocese of Savannah became much more involved in promoting the story of Friar Pedro de Corpa and companions, working very closely with our postulator, who's the person who kind of advocates or presents the cause in Rome. And he is a Franciscan friar in Rome. And so we've worked on promotion, which included the documentary that the diocese produced, which was aired for the first time nationally on EWTN a few months ago. We commissioned the monument to the friars, which is in Darien, Georgia, about an hour south of Savannah. And we commissioned the Timothy Schmaltz, the Canadian sculptor, who has done a lot of beautiful Catholic art. So and then just advancing, you know, information, making presentations, making sure that we are responding to inquiries of people that want to learn more, prayer cards, website, and little by little, things have moved forward. And, of course, a lot of prayer from the faithful, praying that these friars would be recognized by the Church for their defense of the sacrament of marriage. The cause has moved the last 3 years a little bit more quickly, going through different committees in Rome that review the cause that we're presenting. There's the historical committee, there is the theological committee, and then the pastoral application committee. And these are committees that meet just once a year, and they review all the cases that have been brought that are being presented to Rome. So this news in January, we were praying for a positive response and for the Holy Father to officially proclaim that these men did die as martyrs for hatred of the faith. And so we did receive those news. And what that means is that we can now expect a beatification ceremony in the Diocese of Savannah in the near future.
Wonderful.
The date has not been set. It's more than likely going to be in 2026, which is the 800th anniversary of the death of St. Francis. And the Franciscans anticipate that there will be various celebrations and commemorations throughout the world. So our hope is that this beatification will be part of that larger Franciscan celebration throughout the world. So it's very, very exciting news, not just for the Diocese of Savannah, but as you mentioned, for the church here in the United States, that we can hold this beatification celebration here, and which will be accessible to so many, to thousands of faithful Catholics who will
Wonderful.
Be able to join together for that special occasion.
We've been talking today with Father Paolo Magone, Vicar for Mission Advancement for the Diocese of Savannah, about these newly announced martyrdom accepted in Rome for the Martyrs of Georgia. This is exciting news, and we'll look forward to news about when that beatification is set here for the United States. I'm sure that will be a very well-attended event. But for people who don't know, and most Catholics do not know, tell us about Pedro de Corpa and the Four Companions. Who are they anyway, other than these martyrs? Who are the people who experienced this?
Mm-hmm. These five friars were all from Spain, Franciscan friars from different provinces in Spain, who received the call, or rather responded to the call, for friars to come to the New World to evangelize the native peoples. When St. Augustine was founded in the province of La Florida, St. Augustine, Florida today, the governor was tasked by the kings of Spain that they needed to bring friars to evangelize the native peoples. So these are friars that responded to that call. They came to the New World, most of them via La Habana in Cuba, and then eventually to St. Augustine, where they were trained, where they learned the needs of the church here in the southeast, what's now the southeastern United States. And eventually they were sent north of St. Augustine into the northern end of the Spanish province of La Florida, which reached all the way to what today is Parris Island in South Carolina, not very far from the Georgia-South Carolina border. We know that Pedro was a friar from Vigalvilla, Spain, which today is a suburb of Madrid. If you go to Vigalvilla today, you can visit the church where Pedro was baptized. It's the same baptismal font there that where Pedro was baptized. Pedro became the leader of the friars in this part of the province of La Florida, and he arrived in the early 1590s along with the other friars, and they established missions along the Georgia coast, some of them on the mainland, some of them on the barrier island. What ended up happening is that there was a young man named Juanillo who had been baptized, who had accepted the presence of the friars, and Juanillo wanted to take a second wife. When Juanillo went to Friar Pedro requesting this, which was a common practice among the Gwale in coastal Georgia, Pedro said to Juanillo that he could not take a second wife because he had been baptized. And he had to respect the sacrament of marriage. He already had been married through his wife. Juanillo did not like that response, so he gathered a group of friends, and they came back to the mission of Tolomato, where Pedro de Corpa was, and they killed Friar Pedro, and then they went on to neighboring missions along the coast, and in the span of about 1 week, killed five of the friars. After this happened, Spanish authorities came up from St. Augustine to investigate. We have the transcripts of the interrogation done by these soldiers. 8 young men were taken back to St. Augustine for further interrogation. And all of the responses from the eyewitnesses of the martyrdoms all say that the main reason why friars had been killed by the natives was because the friars did not allow them to take a second wife. So we know for a fact that what kind of sparked this the execution of the friars, the martyrdom of the friars, was their support and their teaching, the church's teaching, on the sacrament of marriage. What archaeologists tell us is that the Franciscans here along the coast were able to make a lot of accommodations for the Gwale in terms of cultural accommodations, allowing the Gwale to bury their people with grave goods, the art in the missions that has survived represents, you know, Gwale faces of the on the stations of the cross. There, we know the Franciscans allowed for all sorts of accommodations, but when it came to the sacraments of the church, when it came to the doctrine of the church, the friars certainly, and rightfully so, were unbending. And it's for that reason that they gave their lives in the teaching and the preaching of the gospel. So these friars, we truly believe, are a great example for the world today. We see all over the place the disintegration of married life, of family life, the reinterpretations or redefining of what marriage is. We truly believe that these friars are today, you know, they're speaking to us today of the importance of the church to defend our teachings, our doctrine, but in a special way, what we teach on marriage. Also, these friars show us how to live the gospel courageously. They left everything behind to come preach the gospel, and they knew that they could lose their lives when they came here to evangelize, and they did. So they're an example of a gospel-driven life. And finally, they remind us of the Catholic presence in what today is the United States, the presence of the Spanish missionaries of the Catholic Church long before the English arrived. So the roots of Catholicism in North America run deep and are old. So they're a part of history that is oftentimes glossed over or very little is taught about it. But I think that the story of these men should encourage us as Catholics that we have a presence, especially here in Georgia, where we're a very small percentage of the total population. The Diocese of Savannah is less than 3% Catholic. So it's something that we can be proud of, that we have these men who were here first and brought the Christian faith, and that the oldest church that has been found in the state of Georgia is a Catholic church, the Catholic Mission of St. Catherine of Gwale on St. Catherine's Island.
Amazing. And going forward, will there be a shrine or other place recognizing these new blesseds?
Mm-hmm. In the church in Darien, Georgia, there's a small mission church there called Nativity of Our Lady. We have commissioned a monument, a beautiful, beautiful bronze sculpture of the friars. And at this point, that would be our kind of pilgrimage point, pilgrimage spot where people gather. It's possible to go there to the shrine, to the monument, to coordinate with the local church, to have a mass, a pilgrimage. And also, we've connected with the nearby Fort King George, which is the initial English settlement in what became the state of Georgia. And Fort King George was built on the site of a Spanish mission. So we now have an arrangement that groups can go to Darien, Georgia, on the coast. They can go to the parish, have mass. They can watch the documentary on the friars. We have a second part of the documentary that talks more about the archaeology of the area, the mission, you can pray at the monument, and then you can go over less than a mile away, visit the site, 14th George, where they tell the story of the missions and of the friars, and where for a very long time they've been telling the story of the now venerable Pedro de Corpa. And you can visit there the site of an old mission. That's a mission not where one of the friars were killed, but it is a Spanish mission, and you can get a sense of the place, you know, swamps and the barrier island. It's a beautiful, beautiful site. So we continue to work to develop, something more concrete in the sense of a shrine or a place of pilgrimage. But for anyone that already wants to go, who a parish that might want to bring a bus or people that just want to stop by, they can reach out to the Diocese of Savannah, to the communications office, and we will be happy to help you arrange a visit.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Pablo Migone, Vicar for the Mission Advancement of the Diocese of Savannah, for telling us the amazing story of the martyrs of Georgia and this incredible news that came out of Rome just last month that's leading to their beatification at a date to be determined coming soon in the Diocese of Savannah. And people can go to thegeorgiamartyrs.org for more information as well. Thank you so much for Father Pablo Migone for joining us on today's program.
Thank you very much. God bless you.
God bless. That was Father Pablo Migone from the Diocese of Savannah talking to us about the martyrs of Georgia. Absolutely amazing story that we'll be hearing more about in the days to come. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio. Check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Susan Tassone, author of New Friends, Now and Forever. And she was talking to us today about the double indulgence for the Jubilee. And also Father Pablo Migone from the Diocese of Savannah, talking to us about the martyrs of Georgia. Check out my episode of Pont Main on Explore with the Miracle Hunter, which airs on EW10 television on Saturday, February 22nd at 7 p.m. I'll be going to Pont Main in northwest France, where the Virgin Mary, under the title of Our Lady of Hope, appeared to farm children and to an army, precipitating the end of the Franco-Prussian War. And join me on my Jubilee Year pilgrimage, July 28th through August 3rd. We'll be going to Rome, Milan, Florence, and Turin. You can find out more and sign up at pilgrimages.com/Miracle Hunter. I'd like to thank you today for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.